Happy New Year to everyone. First week, first full week in 2025, and that means a lot of new things for our church family, which will impact the podcast today. The slide behind us is new, and it contains our new theme, Looking to Jesus, or as the NASB says, fixing our eyes on Jesus. It might be fun to talk about that sometime. that is going to be the theme for 2025. And as we talked about in our worship service on Sunday morning, our reading this year is going to be from the Gospels of Matthew and John, since we are looking to Jesus this year. And so week number one begins with Matthew chapter 1. So if you go there in your Bible, we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Might be helpful, Jeff, to remind everybody. I'm going to hold up the reading schedule. If you don't have one of those, we'd urge you to pick one of those up, or you can download it off the website. But we want you to have a copy of the schedule, that we're reading week by week. One other thing, just real quick about that, don't get discouraged if you miss a few weeks or fall behind. Just grab the next chapter and continue along with us as we do the reading together. One other reminder while I'm thinking about it, if you have any questions or comments you'd like for Jeff and I to talk about, we really, really are eager to add your feedback into the podcast that we do each week. We'll try to do that, especially when I answer your questions. And remember that we're going to do something, especially with families in mind, talk a little bit about how to help your kids with the text. We'll do that in week number two every week to give you some ideas for discussion with your family. All right, so that's kind of where we're going this year. This week we are in Matthew chapter 1. I guess it would be helpful just to say a few things about the gospel itself.
Yeah.
Matthew is one of four, and so we have four accounts of the life.
It comes first in the New Testament, the way we've arranged it.
Right, and it is also one of the three synoptics,
right,
which I think is what's going to make the reading with Matthew and John interesting, because John is not one of the synoptics.
Right.
Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we call them the synoptic gospels, and they have a lot of similarities with each other, but
right.
Mark is quite different, or John, rather, is quite different from those.
Right, because the synoptics give synopses of Jesus, whereas John is much more limited. That's why so much in John does not appear in the synoptics, including Matthew, because John is much more focused on portraying a different kind of portrait of Jesus, focuses on seven particular signs. He didn't even call them miracles. His vocabulary is even different. They are signs. And then, of course, Jesus has a lot of teaching, longer teaching sections, especially John 13 through 17, that don't really appear in the synoptic gospels either. Jesus is not a storyteller. He's not a parable teller in John's gospel. John is very much interested in painting a different portrait, not a contradictory portrait, but to bring out some different—
complementary.
That's right. Bring out a very different aspect highlight different aspects of the significance of Jesus and what he accomplished.
Yeah, I think that's one of the important things to say about the Gospels, is that very often where they are different, what you're finding is the Gospel complementing and supplementing, adding new information that actually fills out the information that we have in other places. So it might be helpful to talk a little bit about Matthew's uniqueness. While they all fundamentally tell the same story,
I mean,
the basics are the same, the approach of each one is really, really quite different, as you were just saying with John. So let's think about what makes Matthew unique among the other four.
Right. Well, and even, obviously the three synoptics are unique from John, because John is not synopsizing. He tells a very limited, in terms of time, very, in some
ways. Is that a word?
I think so.
Synopsizing? Somebody looked that up in Texas.
Yeah. You can always add words to your dictionary in Word, though. But within the synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, even, we're so used to trying to harmonize the story of Jesus rather than let each gospel tell the story in its own way. Even within the synoptics, Mark is shorter. It's quicker, and. It's very fast-paced. Luke is longer and very much, very much emphasizes Jesus, the parable teller. And then some things like that. Matthew, though, which we're going to read the first part of this year, Matthew very, very much wants to show Jesus, while all the Gospels are connecting Jesus to the Old Testament, Matthew really, really wants to emphasize in a very thoroughgoing way the fulfillment aspect. Matthew very much more explicitly says this is to fulfill, this was to fulfill.
Right. And you'll see lots of Old Testament connections then.
And explicit quotations, this was to fulfill. And you'll see that even in the first couple of weeks, there are several times that happens in our first couple of weeks readings here, these early chapters. And then the other thing is, you know, Matthew, especially early on, we'll notice Matthew likes to show Jesus as new Moses, that he is the new covenant bringer. And that's part of why unique to Matthew's gospel, the Sermon on the Mount, in which, even though you'll find similar material delivered slightly differently in Luke's gospel, the Sermon on the Plain, we sometimes call it in Luke chapter 6, the very way and the location it's delivered in Matthew's gospel is meant to point us back to Moses on Sinai, you know, in which, and even the structure of the Sermon on the Mount compared to Exodus 20 through 23, and some of the way that God had Moses bring some early revelation of the new of the old covenant down to Israel. Jesus is the harbinger of the prophet like unto Moses, who would be another covenant-bringing, you know, servant of God. And so, Matthew very, very much, you know, has his own agenda in how he wants to situate Jesus against the Old Testament. And that starts as early as the genealogy, because Matthew's genealogy is very different than Luke's genealogy, not just in terms of the names. We focus on the names, but how it's styled, exactly what's in and what's out. There actually is a method, there's a structure to it. And so Matthew's genealogy, which is how he opens, Luke does not open with a genealogy, but Matthew does. And so even there where we're reading this week, that genealogy is one of you already begin to see the way Matthew wants to connect Jesus to the story and to the prophecies.
It's interesting that Matthew lays at the beginning because it really does have sort of those threads that tie it together, that this is one story. And Matthew kind of becomes that knitting point that, that pulls the two stories together with that heavy influence on the Old Testament. Let's since you brought it up, let's get into chapter 1, which we're going to be reading this week, and admonish everybody, don't skip the first 17 verses.
Yeah, the genealogy, there's actually a lot going on in there.
Well, so really, And this will trigger Jeff because we're going to talk about chapter divisions. Really, Matthew begins with the birth story, and yet it's broken up actually awkward between verses 17 and 18. But if you read all of chapter 1 and 2, you really kind of get that complete picture of the birth story. So we're going to really be trying as we read this year to not let the chapter divisions get in the way. And so one of the things you might want to consider doing over weeks 1 and 2 is actually just reading chapters 1 and 2 and read the story as a whole unit. In fact, Jeff and I are going to do that. We're just going to focus this week on the genealogy, the first 17 verses. And then next week we'll pick up at verse 18 and work the whole birth story through the end of chapter 2. But I think if you read that as a unit, you'll really get a better sense of how it was intended to be understood.
Yeah, no, I think that's good.
So that makes you happy that we
can do that.
We trashed the chapter break.
Good way to start the new year.
So I think our impulse is when we see the list of names.
Eyes glaze over.
Yes, this is Passover country,
Get on to verse 18.
Or I should say, flyover country is what I meant to say.
A very Jewish reference there. Well done.
But actually... And I think that you said a very Jewish thing to say. I think the Jews would have been especially concerned about this.
They had to be. They had
this
to be.
This would have been very meaningful to them. But I think it is too narrow to say only for the Jewish audience.
100%.
This is a big part of tying the Bible story together, this genealogy.
That's right, because ultimately it was to Abraham and then to David that God had given promises. And you'll notice how literally chapter 1 and verse 1 begins. It's the genealogy of Jesus Christ, son of David, son of Abraham.
And going literally in two big leaps going all the way back to the beginning of the story.
But those were the two men to whom God had made promises of which Jesus is the fulfillment. And so, again, you sit there and say, you know, you're right. It's not just the Jews who'd have to be concerned about this, because as Paul makes clear in Romans 9 through 11, if you can't show how God kept his word to the Jews, the Gentiles can rightly ask, so why should I trust God when he makes promises in the gospel?
Right.
And so it's absolutely crucial, even for a Gentile who's not sitting there saying, yeah, well, this is my, you know, this is my Jewish ancestry, or this is my, you know, my covenant or whatever. you know, for me to take the gospel seriously, I need to know that God kept his word.
Yeah, I think one of the practical lessons of the genealogy is the faithfulness of God.
Absolutely.
I would challenge you, when you look at the names, try to think about the stories associated with the names and the periods of history
right.
through which the names take us. And, right. you know, there are good days and there are bad days, and all of it just maps out the historical challenges of God doing what Matthew 1 is going to tell us he did, and right. that's bring Jesus into right. the world. God is faithful to his promises.
Yeah, you know, just you know, all the enormity of the stories of the Old Testament about how that happened are just kind of compacted in this list of names, you know, some of whom we know and some, you know, we don't remember, but there they are. And so, yeah, it's you know, the starting place is just, first of all, understanding that this is the fulfillment of the promise to Abraham that through him all nations would be blessed and that he would have a seed, you know, a seed. As Paul will make clear, even clearer in Galatians, you know, that this is the ultimate fulfillment of the seed promise. And then, of course, son of David, you know, I will give your son your throne, and I will establish a house for you. And so here we are, and the time has come for God to ultimately fulfill both those promises to those men.
And so we open with the connection of Jesus
yep.
all the way back to Genesis 12.
Yep.
In you, all families of the earth will be blessed.
Right.
And now we're seeing the fulfillment of that. Do you see any pitfalls that people need to be warned about? Beside the pitfall of flying over and not paying attention to them, what other areas should people be cautious about when reading genealogies generally? Because I don't think we tend to read them. I think we tend to Correct. Ignore them. So as we dig in a little more, what should people be careful about?
Be careful about, you know, because we tend to be, we're worried about evidences and apologetics, and so we're worried about, you know, being able to prove things historically. And so sometimes you'll sit there and say, well, this, you know, how does this genealogy match with Luke's genealogy? Is there a conflict? Is there a contrast? And we're missing the point that many of the genealogies in the Bible, when they are given, it's not meant to give you every generation and everybody whose name should be on the list. In Matthew's case, he makes clear what he's up to, though because it's not our culture, we don't always catch it. Because you'll notice it emphasizes verse 17, so all the generations from Abraham to David were 14, and from David to the deportation of Babylon were 14 generations, and from the deportation of Babylon to Christ, 14 generations. Now, the thing is, you know, you can go and try to count, you know, and you can, by the way, you could go and count. I mean, and that's literally the names we've got. What Matthew is doing is telling the genealogy of Jesus in a stylized way to communicate a point. That's why it matters. It's three groups of 14. And this works on a couple of levels. Number one, you know, it's from Abraham to David, from David to Babylon, and then from Babylon to Christ. We teach the timeline a certain way in our kids' classes and our Bible classes. This is how God sees the timeline. What's the timeline? From his initial promise to Abraham until the kind of the beginning of the fulfillment of it, which was, or the first stage of fulfillment as God sees it, mm-hmm. which was, you know, even in Joshua's day, they did not have full rest in the land, right?
Right.
But so the book of Judges era goes on. There was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. Saul, we tell, is the first king of Israel, and he was, in the sense of God gave the people the kind of king they wanted.
But he wasn't God's king.
But who was the first king that, like Deuteronomy anticipated, when I raise up a king?
Right.
Who was that guy? That guy was David.
Yeah. First king was their idea.
That's right. And so the first king of, and that's why David then becomes the type of Christ.
Right.
The one who will really truly then be the ruler of God's people in God's land. Of course, we, you know, and David and Solomon are kind of parts one and part two of the Messiah. David was the warrior Messiah. Solomon was the reign of peace and eternal bliss kind of Messiah. And so parts one and two. So, and that's why David is the father of Solomon and so forth. But obviously the house of David is corrupt. So David, and that's why it mentions Bathsheba, David and his line fail humanly speaking. That's Babylon, the captivity. They failed, and they lost the land. And so that's part two of the story. And so what happens then is the return from Babylon, you know, from the deportation of Babylon under Christ, that's stage three of the story. The beginning of the return from exile, as we tell the story, was not literally just them coming back to the land. The real restoration was a second David needs to come.
Right. And we talked about it in the prophets, right?
Right. Right.
That the restoration, sometimes right. we think of it as it's just getting back into the land.
Right. And so the ultimate fulfillment of the promise to Abraham was not the first coming of David. David got another promise, first David. And all of it, both Abrahamic promise and Davidic promise, are then fulfilled in the coming of
Jesus.
And again, doesn't even call him by name yet, just simply says, verse 17, to the Christ, to the Messiah, to the anointed one, the promised one, there in verse 17. And so that's the first thing that, again, don't write these things off. This matters. Then the other thing is, besides the way the history is told, why 14 names in each group? And this is where it gets a little bit tricky. Just like Roman numerals, we're not used to this in English, where we're used to our numbers being different than our letters. Most languages use their letters as their numbers. The name David in Hebrew is spelled with three letters, three periods. And when you add up the value of the letters of David's name in Hebrew, it adds up to 14. And so it's a subtle way of repeatedly emphasizing.
Yeah.
At least that's one of the best explanations I know of for why three groups, three letters to David's name, 14 generations each time. This is the real David. This is the fulfillment of Abrahamic and Davidic promise. And that's why Matthew opens the way he does. What we have been longing for, the turning of the ages, the ultimate fulfillment of what God is up to in human history, Abrahamic, Davidic, all of it is in this Christ who Matthew is now going to tell us this story about. Yeah.
And just to tag on the end of that, and it ties back to the first thing you said about the faithfulness of God being present here, it does give that technical linkage back to David and Abraham,
sure,
which is necessary to establish that Jesus is the Messiah. We're
right.
told he's going to be a descendant of Abraham.
Right.
And so for a Jewish audience to believe that,
right,
you've got to be able to show that he is a descendant of Abraham
right.
and of David. And so
nobody else can be a Messiah.
There's sort of in the Bible story, there's sort of a technical purpose that's served
right.
by drawing these right. connections back. So the truth is, there's a whole lot more going on than just
right.
the listing of the names.
Right. And I think part of the takeaway for us, too, when you move to then, what do we do with this today? It's just a genealogy. God was faithful to his promises. Sometimes we think about, how do I building faith in God, being trust in God, because like the Hall of Witnesses in Hebrews 11, right? I read the stories about how God delivered Daniel or he delivered Joseph or, whatever. And those stories matter, and those can be faith-building. But the trick of the matter is God doesn't always deliver people. Hebrews 11 reminds us of that, too.
Right.
In this life, God doesn't always deliver people. So what really is the bedrock of how I really know God is faithful in the end? Jesus has already come the first time.
Right.
That is the ultimate.
I know he's coming
card.
Again because
That's
it's
right.
already happened.
That's right. He's already made the down payment on it.
Yep.
And that's, it's just a genealogy. We say this genealogy preaches in a powerful way.
Yeah. So I think that really leaves us with a couple of things to do in the reading this week. Number one, read the genealogy. Read it several times. And think about the stories behind the names and ponder the faithfulness of God. And then if you'd like a little bit more than just to spend the first week of the year reading a genealogy over and over again, go ahead and read the rest of chapter 1 or chapter 2 and get into the birth story. And next week when we get back together, we'll talk a little bit more about that story and talk a little bit about how you can connect it in your devotional time with your kids at home.